Welcome to the DARE podcast, where it is all about helping people overcome anxiety and panic attacks. The DARE app has over 1 million downloads and is free to download at dareresponse.com. Now, without further ado, here is the DARE podcast.
Hello, Michelle.
Oh, hi.
Hi, good to see you.
Good to see you. Sorry, I was logged into my other account.
So we have quite a few questions. So last time we actually managed to answer, I think, 5. Maybe we can beat the record today. And just to clarify, you guys, we scan all the questions before we start the webinar. So we are aware of every question and we try to bundle them up so mm-hmm. that we can talk to anyone who took their time to submit a question. We want you to know that all of our questions are always read and appreciated. We just never have the time to go through all of them. That's why we bundle them up.
So if we find something that we haven't addressed in a long time, we usually bump that to the top to address something that maybe doesn't come in so often. But there's a good chance after all the podcasts we've done and all the webinars we've had, they've been addressed before. But it definitely doesn't hurt for repetition. A lot of times repetition, hearing the same thing in different ways, can kind of help reinforce this idea. Okay, so should we start? Should we start with the one I was mentioning to you?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
So you guys know I try and post daily. I post my little posts. I post them into the Facebook forums or the DARE Facebook pages. So I told somebody in one of the comments that I would address this on the call, because even though this has been addressed before, and the underlying premise of DARE is like, it's about like, again, anxiety about anxiety, like changing your disordered relationship with anxiety. So, so I just said I would address this. It was from my post yesterday. It kind of, if you're on YouTube or if you can see this live on the webinar, it looks like this. Okay. Keep calm and live life. And I scratched out keep calm, because that's kind of our premise of DARE, where the ultimate foundation is calm and safety are two different things. And we have sort of misinterpreted not being calm as being dangerous. Okay. So there was a comment here. What if your self-regulating system is disordered from trauma and doesn't work properly? Do you just sit there and be traumatized waiting for this theory to kick in? It's interesting how if DARE doesn't bring about helpful change, it's the sufferer's fault for continuing to resist. The human organism is programmed to resist survival threats, real or imagined, and DARE doesn't address this. I've seen people post something similar, like, well, if DARE is not working for me, it's because I'm doing something wrong. And it's that interpretation is I failed somehow. It's my fault. So I don't know if anybody has find that like had a similar story pop up or feel similar. It was addressed here, but I had said, thank you for mentioning this, because again, DARE is for your disordered relationship with anxiety. Now, that doesn't mean if you have other things that have gone on in life, like trauma or grief and loss or addiction or eating disorders, you don't also get treatment for that. Absolutely. So, but you take the attitude of DARE with you. Also, your eating disorder work won't necessarily change your relationship with anxiety also. So in conjunction, it's this idea of attend to what needs attending to. I don't know. This could be an entire webinar, but I hope that makes sense. If there's other things that have gone on with your life, attend to those things and use this approach. And this is not DARE. We're not a special, this is this idea of allowing your body to feel because feelings are safe.
Yes. And I think it's an important question. I think it's important that you address this, because there tends to be a little bit of confusion about this. And I like your example with, let's say, the eating disorder. So an eating disorder usually is often accompanied by anxiety and panic attacks. Now imagine somebody going through an eating disorder, experiencing panic attacks, and are also starting to fear the panic attacks. Now that person now has two wars to fight. there's the eating disorder, but there's on top of that also the panic attacks. Now, if that person works with their eating disorder, the panic attacks might diminish. They might not, however, if the fear of panic attack, panic attacks remain. So as they're really, it's very specifically designed for fear, around fear, but it's also in the broader context, a philosophy of life, really, how you can walk through life and deal with challenging emotions. So it's really important to state that nobody at DARE or Barry in his book ever stated or even thinks that DARE is the solution to every problem. It is not. We have always pointed that out as really important. If there is a clear underlying issue for your anxiety, that you address that, because no amount of daring in the world will fix your depression or fix your trauma or fix whatever you have going on, if there is something that is clear. And so that is one case, underlying issue accompanied by anxiety, or, and then there's the other one, and that is, I had one panic attack randomly out of the blue, like Barry, because I had a hangover. I don't have any underlying things. I just started to fear and got into this rabbit hole that now is completely stealing away my life. Do you need to go to therapy now for that? It can be helpful, yes, but you could just use an acceptance-based approach, in this case, the DARE approach, to tackle your fear of fear, because it's fear of fear that maintains it. And you hear us say this so many times, we don't care that much what triggered it. It's interesting to know, it's important for clients to know so they have an understanding of their personal anxiety story, but it doesn't help. Right. It doesn't help, even if you would be 100% sure, oh, these panic attacks or these intrusive thoughts were triggered by X, Y, Z. Oh, light bulb moment. Awesome. Now what?
Now what?
But now, are they going away? No, just because you have this conclusion, it doesn't go away.
Right. Which is also like the goal of trauma therapy as well. I mean, it's a complicated topic, but it's the idea of you've been through some version of danger, whether a one-off danger or an extended period of time, and to sort of like reintegrate you being here, and that here is safe, and things that trigger a memory or memories of back then, like it's safe to have a memory and to get back into life as much as possible, to carry on with life from the trauma. So know that that's like a good trauma therapy, that would be the ultimate goal as well. Reintegration with life as much as possible, because life here is safe. As you might go on with life and have reminders of your past danger, to acknowledge the past, to send, you know, this message of I'm safe here, and to get back on with living rather than going back into survival mode. So of course there are always, trauma often comes paired with an anxiety disorder. Of course, it makes sense. Eating disorder, addiction disorder. You'll see like a lot of things come up like, oh, I have this and I'm dealing with this and I'm also dealing with this. I'm grieving. I lost a close family member, and now I'm having anxiety. And now I'm having anxiety about the anxiety about that. So, right? If you're having a hard time processing grief, that's what a grief counselor is for, like I was saying on one of the other webinars, to help you grieve, not to help you not grieve, while you also feel the other feelings that come up throughout this. So I hope that clarifies all this. I can try my best to communicate, but the interpretation that gets received from the other side, it's not one of like, we're not here communicating. If you don't dare write, it's because you suck at this and you need to get better, and it's your fault. Dare is, like Aida was saying, it's more of a philosophy and a mindset on how we sort of like, I don't know, what's the word? Like
how we deal with the wall of fear,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's really what it is. You know, in some cases, Michelle has said so many times, fear is really important. So I've been practicing some calisthenics. Weird example, but I have like a phobia of inversions, like being upside down. Where does that come from trauma? Maybe. I don't know. But it's really, really intense. But I said, you know, I'm going to tackle this fear. I'm going to practice this just for the sake of practicing. I don't want to be afraid of that. And guess what, guys? I used Dare. I was like, no, I can't do this. I can't do this. And I was like, you know what? Just fuck it. Okay, whatever.
Then I'm gonna. What we're gonna do when you come to my house? We're gonna be upside down the whole time.
Oh, you said that. All right. So there was not a dangerous situation, just a very simple situation of life. But I was met with fear, and I couldn't break through that. So this is where I used Dare. But I also used Dare at a time in my life where something really heartbreaking happened. And I felt like I had mini PTSD from that. Mm-hmm. And I got myself a therapist to talk through the pain. She didn't make the event go away. And I did have anxiety. I did have the flashbacks and waking up at night and thinking about that. And guess what? This is where I used Dare too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is my body reacting to something that was really intense. I am sensitized. Okay. Just imagine in that state, if I would have started to fear my body's response. What's wrong with me? And not normalize this as I did. I normalized and I was really okay with me going through a hard time because something had happened. And Dare helped me to navigate through that process in a very smooth and caring way, really. Dare has helped a lot to take care of myself while I did not feel well. You guys, can you relate to that? Is that clear to you?
Nice comments that are popping up here. Like, grief triggered acute anxiety reaction in me a year ago. And so that's a common thing. Grief comes paired oftentimes heightened state of anxiety. And then some people develop an anxiety disorder. That anxiety came in response to grief. And then we got anxiety about grief. And so continue with the grief process. And if you're having a hard time doing that on your own, that's what a grief therapist is for. While you also, again, anxiety is still safe, whether anxiety showed up post-trauma, post-grief, post-random event at the movie theater, post-weird hormonal changes, post-whatever anxiety showed up. It's not the anxiety disorder is the disorder relationship we develop with our danger fighting system. And so, mm-hmm. of course, trauma always can often come into play, because if you've been through trauma, you've been through danger, and there's a good chance your danger fighting system was on through that process. And now that the danger has resolved, your danger fighting system may have not. Mm-hmm. So Dare is for this piece. The trauma work is for the back piece, both of which are to bring you back to here, because here is safe.
Yeah, and maybe to give you something more tangible. I was just thinking, Michelle, I have this thought. If you were a beginner at this, if you would know any of this, and you would all of a sudden start to experience panic attacks and anxiety, how would you go about it? What would you do? And I think putting ourselves into the shoes of an absolute beginner is really helpful. And you know what I would do? So the first thing I would do is check my physical body. Is everything okay? Do I have a thyroid problem? And I would get a health checkup. Mm-hmm. And if my doctor says, you're fine, everything is good. Okay, awesome. Then, okay, something going on. Am I worried about something, about job or my relationship? What did the past months look like? What have I been doing? Mm-hmm. Have I been constantly pushing through work and demands? And did I have any time for self-care and for enjoyment? If the answer is no, maybe, this was just a little bit too much. But if in general, everything is kind of okay, and I ask myself, what am I really afraid of? Oh, it's of these feelings and of these thoughts. There you go. Right? Try to keep this rough map in mind. Now, it's so easy when this happens to remember, oh yeah, right, when I was a kid, I had all this trauma, and now it's haunting me. And now, because of my trauma, and I'm 43 years old, now I have to go back and work through everything. It's a far stretch. I understand why people would think like that. And in some cases, very rare cases, that might be true, but in general, it's not. So always keep in mind, ask yourself and answer honestly, what is driving this? What is driving this? Is it my fear of this thing? Or is it because, looking rationally at my life, something is really, really off? Mm-hmm. How would you go about it, Michelle?
attend to trauma. I've gotten a lot of clients who have really only done trauma therapy trying to eliminate their anxiety disorder. Do you know what I mean? Like, just like I'll go to grief counseling to get rid of these feelings. And it's like the intention is sort of off. And so the anxiety disorder continues. And let's try this version of therapy and let's try this version of therapy. And therapy is great for its intended purpose. But if the intention is to stop having panic attacks, then you're using an excellent treatments, but for the, like using a screwdriver for a hammer, right? Mm-hmm. So trauma therapy is super useful, especially for, we're getting a little too far into this now, but let's say CPTSD, where it's a more complex, where you've developed maybe patterns of like, it's changing how you relate to other people. You've learned to, you have certain expectations of the world from coming from a place of consistent danger that other people might not have if they've always known safety. If you've had sudden loss, right, you might be more expecting of something bad to happen than other. So that kind of therapy can help with that. Can help to let you feel feelings that maybe you weren't allowed to feel from back then. In the end, trauma therapy usually brings you to here anyway, of here is safe. And a good trauma therapist really would be in line with some version of this. Like, again, yeah, somebody wrote like, I just missed it before. Like, let's say like, you know, oh, all your different parts serve a different purpose. Yes. Bring them all together because here is safe. Oh, family systems therapy. Oh, yes. And so we're going to go back and it's sending this message of safety here while you go with somebody who can guide you to back then. And if you find that useful, use it. Absolutely use it. But we've had a lot of people who go back and do all these things really to attend to an anxiety disorder. Mm-hmm. And this didn't work and this didn't work and this didn't work because I'm still having a panic attack at the grocery store. I talked about my grandmother. I talked about my mom. I talked about my parents. Or I talked about all these things. I'm still having panic attacks at the grocery store. That's kind of using the wrong approach for the wrong intention. So I have a hard time explaining this.
No, you're explaining it really well, right? Really, really well. And as I went to my therapist, so usually, you know, like normal, to ask what's going on, what are your sensations, what are you experiencing? I said this and that. We never talked about anxiety. We never talked about panic attacks, right? Because she knew, oh yeah, that's kind of normal that you would feel that way. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. Our goal was not, okay, how do we address my anxiety about what happened? We address the thing that happened. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, anxiety mm-hmm. is a very, very small part of that. Okay, guys, I hope we made that clear. And let's jump into some questions. Michelle, would you like to start or should I go ahead?
Sure. Okay, I love how we always pick, somebody brought this to my attention that we always seem to pick percentage of recovered. I'm 73.7% recovered. It's so funny. I never realized that until somebody brought that to my attention. Now I see it everywhere. So here's the first question. I'm about 80% recovered, but I still have lingering memories of dark times. They don't consume me. Sometimes they are there on and off all day. Did yours eventually fade away? So I don't know if it's necessarily memory of dark times, like trauma, like what we're talking about, or dark times of when I was really in like the grips of this anxiety disorder, like remembering how trapped I was back then.
Yeah, I think this is what he or she means, because I had a similar question. Hi, great.
Good. I love when people are here live for their questions.
Yes. So I had a similar question in one of the group calls where a member said, I'm totally fine. Everything is okay. But when I think back to my first panic attack and I remember how anxious I was, I get anxiety now. Mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Anxiety. And so we were touching on trauma here. And it's like a mini trauma. And what is a trauma, guys? Okay, trauma, the word is being thrown around so easily. Mm-hmm. Something that happens that exceeds my coping strategies at the moment. That's a trauma. something happens that's severe and I can't cope because I don't know what it is. I don't know what to do. So this is what you experienced back then. I'm not going to mention names, but you, I mean, you who's in the chat who asked the question. Back then, you didn't know what it was. You didn't know what to do. So it felt overwhelming. And what you're experiencing now is a memory of that overwhelm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That naturally triggers a response in the here and now. Hey, remember when you were so overwhelmed? What if that happens again? Completely normal that that happens. But how are you treating that memory and your moment right now? Right? The, oh my God, what happened? Can't control that. But then you can reframe and say, yeah, what's the truth? Back then, I didn't know what it was. I felt overwhelmed. I can never go back to that state because now I'm different. I have tools. I have a deeper understanding. It might still be uncomfortable, but other things in life are too. I can handle this. Mm-hmm. All right. But this memory can pop up. It's okay for me to have this uncomfortable memory and not fight it.
Yes. Remember this, my little guy that I hold up. And if you guys can't see the chat, if you're watching the webinar, there should be a little icon on the bottom to open the chat that you can see the whole group chat of people popping on. So all the chats so far, I think, are for everyone to see. This that's on our YouTube channel, I hold this up all the time. Memories we're talking about. Whether memories of something that happened 5 minutes ago or memories of something that happened in your childhood or memories of being in a heightened state. You're not in a heightened state now, but you remember a heightened state, which then puts you into a heightened state, right? Remember the one of the basic cruxes of DARE, memories are safe. What ifs, imagine futures are safe. Okay, so memories are in this line because this is not the problem. This is the problem. This is where we fight memories. So, you know, the way my non-nice way of speaking would be, why can't I remember that? So remember, our alarm guy only he doesn't care how you feel. He cares about safety. If we start treating how we feel as not safe or certain things as like not allowed, he marks that as danger. A memory of a time when I felt scared is safe. Mm-hmm. This is how you would work DARE mindset into trauma work again, too. I am here. You're doing trauma work. There might be sometimes where you're going back there. Okay. So you might talk about back there or do somatic work where you feel memories of how it felt back there, but you are here. And that's here is safe.
Yes. And very important, guys, what Michelle just said, the I am here part in trauma therapy is essential. Right. And it's essential in this example here as well.
I am here.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Michelle, but I thought that was so important to highlight that, right? That in trauma therapy, it's not, and this is what people often misunderstand. We go back and we dive into the trauma and now we cry it out or all there. No, you talk about and you process your memories while you are here. And it's mm-hmm. the same principle with DARE. Back mm-hmm. to you, Michelle.
Mm-hmm. No, that was really it. Like I am here remembering something from back there. Now, was it actual danger? No, but it was fear. And when back there, fear feels like danger. It does feel like re-traumatization of like, then you get re-whooshed for a memory of a whoosh.
Whoosh.
Say whoosh. That again.
A whoosh.
No, don't start saying it with a W. Have you been practicing W whooshes?
I have.
Oh, no.
Yeah, sorry, guys. Just
we have to keep. Oh, no, we need the whoosh.
Just joking a little, guys.
Somebody posted in the chat to show the paper again. This is my, you can see it on the YouTube channel. I put this up all the time. It's just my little flip out paper. This is usually what most questions are. I'm struggling with thoughts, struggling with physical sensations. How do you deal with feelings? I can't tolerate these sensations. Listen to the words that's usually paired with these. I added what ifs and memories down here to the bottom. They're basically versions of thoughts, but what ifs are you having a right now thought, but the content takes place in the future? And memories are you having a right now thought, the content takes place in the past? Okay. This is like the jump off point of where our problems, these are not what we use dare for. We use dare for this, the resistance that's created towards these non-dangerous yet highly uncomfortable and unpleasant experiences. Okay, so for this particular question, I'm having memories of times that I didn't like, and truly dare is, oh yeah, that's right, I am, period. And that memory may compare with the feeling, oh yeah, and that does elicit a feeling of blank, yep, period. Oh, I just remember that panic attack and I felt scared or sad or shame or guilt or uncertainty or whatever. Yup to the memory, yup to the feeling that often comes paired with the memory. We usually are only embattled with the memory because it comes paired with unpleasant feelings. And we're usually fighting away the thoughts to fight away the feelings.
Yes. And what you could also do, what's really helpful, is when this memory comes up, to diffuse from it, meaning just going at a little bit of a distance and being slightly detached from the memory, and then looking back at this and really feeling compassion for yourself. Like if you would see another person struggling like you have, what would you feel right now? It really helps to get out of this, oh my God, something is going on right now, to move into, oh yeah, that is something that has happened in the past. And I feel really sorry that I had to go through that. But hey, well done. Genuine compassion is so, so helpful and so, so important, because it brings the memory back to where it should be in your memory, and not in the here and now. Because usually what also comes with that memory is the, and what if that happens again? That's the problem, right? What if that happens again? So, and when you first remember, I'm not that same person anymore. And of course I was overwhelmed. How could I not have been overwhelmed? I didn't know fit. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know how to handle this. So yes, I had every right to feel overwhelmed then again, but it's a memory, diffuse. That was back then. And as I look back at the memory, feeling compassion and care for myself will really help to not project negatively into the future.
Perfect. Perfectly worded. And in the middle of you saying that, we must have had our automatic settings for whatever reason on this webinar just shifted, set to host and panelists. I think when I just clicked it to everyone, I think now everybody can see it. But from this point on, can you guys all see the chat now? I don't know. That's strange, because the setting is usually set to everyone. I didn't realize it. Everybody can see. Okay. Sorry about that, guys. I don't know how that happened. Okay, good. All right. Right.
So, question. One of my biggest challenges for me during my 3 months of anxiety has been eating and keeping food in my body. My appetite has shrunk, and with my gastrointestinal problems due to the anxiety, I've had a hard time keeping food in my body. How would I apply dare to? How would I apply the dare solution to this? Yeah, you guys, who also gets digestive problems with anxiety, I get like totally. It directly affects the abdominal tract. How will we go about this? I think because it's more of a physical thing rather than a mental, emotional thing. I don't know. I don't know. I would have to think about it more in depth. But I would say if it's your fear of not being able to eat, or your fear of swallowing, or your fear of getting sick after eating, then you would practice dare the way we teach it here. But if it's really a physical thing, where like in my case, like my stomach just gets upset, no amount of daring will help. I don't know. I think this is something that you should take to your doctor and ask if he has maybe some modifications of any dietary things that might help until everything settles down a bit. But maybe Michelle has a better answer to that.
Well, this was me. So I So if I'm anxious or worried or nervous about something, and some people will do the opposite. They'll eat more. Food is a comfort. And some people will eat a lot of food and it's comforting. For me, throat down just shuts off. My body's like, nope. And if you guys know me and my story by now, it was always around what if I get sick? Like, what if I throw up? What if I get sick? And I'm especially in front of people. So for me, it was a lot of I just wasn't hungry, which was making me more anxious because I wasn't getting nutrition. My stomach was not full. And then it was full and I was worried it was too full. Then it didn't feel good. And I lost a lot of weight, not because I tried to. I wanted to eat, but being anxious, I lost weight, not purposefully. Also did not have an eating disorder. I was just more trying not to be anxious. So for me, what I did was I ate for the sake of eating at times when I was less anxious, just to get more nutrients into my body. So for me, morning was the worst. Or if I was out and if I was eating with people, I would probably eat less because it was so aware of the food going in my mouth and swallowing and don't choke on the food and don't get sick and don't freak out and don't think about something anxious. And I would be spitting out my foods and napkins and it was just a shit show. So I just let it be a shit show. Okay. I didn't know what I was doing. I kind of bowled through this on my own. What I did was I would eat more food at night. I would get more, I don't know, I would have more things that for my mind were easier to swallow and were easier to eat. So for me, I like to eat apples. I would drink milkshakes or whatever, things like that, that I knew, I wasn't trying to lose weight. I was just not, just had a hard time eating. So I kind of played around with it. So if whoever sends in this question, if you know, there's times of the day where you're sort of at a lower level. Okay, great. I'm in more of a rest and digest mindset anyway. Let's eat now. And then the other stuff sort of happened over a period of time. But if you are losing weight unintentionally, sure, doctors could probably give you some sort of what is it called? Those Ensure type drinks where you can have taken more calories during this period of time where you're just having a hard time eating. Yeah, that would be my response to that. Yes, this was before DARE to the person who's, yes. This was in my teens and my 20s.
Yeah. And you know, it's normal to not be hungry, right? Anxiety is fight or flight. And in fight or flight, your body's like eating and digesting, that this is really not important. Mm-hmm. Really not important. This is why many people, the first sign of physical sign of anxiety is really an upset stomach or any other digestive issues. In my case, too, stress as well. It's crazy how fast the gut reacts. And I understand that you might be worried if you have lost a lot of weight in those 3 months. But on the other hand, your body won't let you starve even when you're anxious. So even if it's much less than you're used to, I think at some point your instincts will kick in and you will be able to eat so much that you will be okay until your sensitization drops down to a level where eating feels more comfortable. And meanwhile, as we said, we're really no experts in this, but maybe some liquid shakes, like Michelle mentioned, that could be something. And the rest, please take it to your doctor.
And somebody posted a good response in the chat. Should eating be treated like sleep? When you try too hard and think about it often, is not allowing the body to naturally want to eat? 100%. Take all of this out of the equation. We're back to cave people back in the day. We would be eating and sleeping and peeing and pooping and doing all these and breathing. And because we would be so busy involved in all these other things, what happens is sleep gets marked as the O of the OCD cycle. Food gets marked as danger. Must eat or else, must sleep or else, must swallow or else. Then becomes the identified, that's kind of how we can spiral out there too. When eating is something that doesn't have, we don't have to think hard to eat. You know, we don't have to think hard to sleep. Us thinking hard and treating food like danger is where we get like, I don't know, then fear becomes fused with eating.
Mm-hmm.
Eating becomes must or else. And then we, us smart people, tell a good logical story. Well, if I do have to eat or else I'm going to starve to death. I do have to sleep. Sleep is very important. Every website says you can. And then we use like that information as like more reasons to battle. And you kind of like our job is to unhook fear from food, mm-hmm. not unhook fear from sleep. Like the comment said, it's the same. It's something that happens naturally, not with a must or else mindset. It's usually the must or else mindset that keeps that heightened state.
Yes. And I advise to my clients, if you can keep the food in, like if vomiting is not your issue or cramps or something after eating, it's just your appetite, you don't have appetite, no, just force it down. Like, sounds like weird advice, but just do it. It really helps because anxiety is really energy costly and you need that energy. So if it's something like a scrambled egg and some avocado or something high in calories, like a handful of walnuts, stuff that is easy to digest and that you can just eat on the go, it's okay to sometimes force yourself to do something that doesn't feel right.
That's mm-hmm. even this comment here, is it engaging or distraction if I can only currently eat if I'm doing something else, like I ate just now during the webinar? That's what I would do too. I would eat mm-hmm. while I was watching TV in the beginning, just to eat. But even me saying that, it sounds like I'm sending double messages. It sounds like, well, then you're forcing, you're distracting. We get so lost in the details. It's, well, I'm really not eating, but I notice I eat more when I'm distracted from stuff. So I just eat more when I'm distracted from stuff. And when you're in a sensitized state, it's going to be harder to eat, sleep, and sex. Okay.
Yep.
Fight, flight, rest, and digest. This stuff just naturally will come back when this comes down. And mm-hmm. so for the meantime, same thing, like expect to not sleep, but you can provide your body rest. Oh, I'm probably not going to sleep well because I'm in a heightened state, but yeah, maybe I might have pockets of time throughout the day that I just I lay down quietly, or I sit outside, or I know I'll probably not go into a deep sleep, but I'll just provide my body some rest. I'm going to provide my body some nutrition until my appetite happens to come back.
Yes.
Like a lighter touch.
Yes, yes. And at the risk of, yes, sounding or sending weird messages or double messages, it's not, if you listen closely. Even with eating, if eating only is possible while you distract yourself, go ahead and distract yourself. Mm-hmm. That's completely okay. On the other day, on one of my academy calls, there was one member who, great story, pushed out and then said, yeah, but I distracted myself while I was out. And I said, great job.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got mm-hmm. like this message, like, oh my God, how now you're saying that's good. Distraction is not good. Sometimes distraction is all you have. Okay. Sometimes it's all you have. And when it's all you have left, then go distract yourself. It's so much better to be out in that grocery store or in that drive and distract yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Be out there. Fantastic job. If you're at home and you're bombarded with intrusive thoughts, instead of sitting on the couch and staring at your thoughts, maybe you have nothing to do, nowhere to go, go and fold some laundry. Yes, go ahead and distract yourself. Right? Is it a general thing to do? No. But if it's all that you have at the moment.
And it gets you going, especially if it gets you going. That's kind of like how we were talking about crutches a few webinars. It was because of one of the posts I put, like the first, something like the first way to, if you want to stop using crutches, you need to first start using them willingly. And what happens is we get a lot of perfectionist mindsets on must do this or else. Like, we're going at recovery the same way that we got ourselves into a disorder. Must eat this food or else. Must not distract myself or else I won't be creating my new neural pathways, and then I'll just be reinforcing my old habits. And if I'm distracting myself, I shouldn't be distracting myself. I should be. And all of this, we're just trying to get a lighter touch. The disorder is not that I'm doing it right or doing it wrong. The disorder is how much of how much of my life I'm spending making decisions because of these thoughts and feelings. How much of my life is being ruled by it, not how perfectly I'm treating my anxiety. I don't treat my anxiety perfectly or my body or my feelings, but does it rule my life anymore? No, that's really the ultimate goal.
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay? To be human and to struggle. You know?
Yes, and to take a Xanax sometimes, because the ultimate message of DARE is who fucking cares? Oh, but I did so good. I didn't take a Xanax on all these flights, and now I took a Xanax on my flight to London. Cool. Cool. Good for
awesome. You.
Oh, you flew to London? Wait, this is the person who wasn't leaving their home, and now you're flying to London to see your family, to take a vacation, and you took a pill so you could feel less bad?
Awesome.
So,
yeah.
Great.
Yes.
Great job going to London.
That's a great response in the chat. Another Michelle wrote, I don't look at it as distraction, but rather finding something that will get my brain off the rumination, like switching tracks. Awesome. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way you look at things and the way you phrase it and the way you treat yourself while you either use crutches or distract yourself, it really matters so, so much. Right? Expecting perfection, it doesn't exist. It only exists in our therapy books. Nowhere else. Step one, step two, step three. It doesn't work like that in real life.
And use them as a means to the end. Sure, I'm using distraction techniques. But look, I'm watching the movie that I wanted to see, because you can still pin what you're doing to your values, whether you did it perfectly or not. I feel like perfection should be a diagnosable disorder, not anxiety, right? It should be, I have a perfection disorder. I have a storytelling disorder. I have a catastrophizing disorder. Not like that's real. And what's nice is that that's the stuff that can be changed. That's the patterns we develop, like based on discomfort. And so what? So take your bottle of water with you into life. You can work on leaving your bottle of water home eventually if you want to, but you don't need to perfect this to enter into the blissful world of recovery. Recovery is the wrong word for this world anyway. It's a weird word. It's smushed into this medical feeling that something needs to be gone in order to be good. And like, yeah, somebody just wrote, I have a perfection disorder. Great. So start fucking up willingly
yeah.
Get it wrong, willingly do it wrong. Bring your bottle of water with you willingly, because who cares? I'm bringing it with me to whatever my value is anyway.
Do and embarrass yourself from time to times.
Mm-hmm.
to not be perfect, right? I think I've told this in another webinar, but it's always worth saying it again. In our CBT education studies, our teacher made us pick a letter out of a jar to do some exposure. It was about social anxiety. And I picked taking the bus in a tourist city, sitting into the bus, and every time the bus stopped, to get up out of my seat and loudly announce the station like a weird person.
You know, you said this in a DARE meeting. And I thought about this. It was either this morning or yesterday morning. I think about you telling that story all the time. And I get a mini whooshed. So that would be my thing.
Mm-hmm.
I would have a very hard time doing that. I feel uncomfortable just you telling this story.
And I did it, guys. I totally rocked it like the first three times. Like my face went red, then it went white. And I was like, oh my God, I could never do this. And after the fourth time, it kind of was funny. And you know, I got all the stares and the what's wrong with her? Should we call an ambulance? And the bus driver was the best. Like he was always looking in the mirror and laughing. And at the
did
end,
did he know?
Like,
did anybody know?
No.
But you?
No, God. The end of the ride, I went to the bus driver and I told him, and he was so cool. He said, I'm going to sign off that you did a fantastic job. You passed. You're the craziest person I've met today.
Who would have a hard time with that? Like, granted, nobody likes the feeling of embarrassment, but some of us, and embarrassment's one of these subtle things. Embarrassment, judgment from others, how others perceive you. I didn't realize how much of that is my thing until, like, because it comes up in subtle ways. And I know that gives me the major ick. Yeah. Like, maybe we'll send you like 10 dare dollars if somebody jumps up on a bus and just does something. We'll send you like 5 dare dollars or something. Tell Barry. Barry's like, I got an invoice for $5,000 from people screaming on buses. Like, it comes with this feeling of like, oh God, I don't want this feeling to happen. Better make sure it doesn't, which turns into the questions that will come in. Now I have this thought, what if I spontaneously, impulsively jump up on a bus and say that? I would be so embarrassed. And here's Aida purposely doing it to elicit the feeling of embarrassed, because embarrassment isn't danger. It's what a big majority of us are desperately trying to avoid. And it's this, desperately trying to avoid disorder, not embarrassment disorder. Okay. It's desperately trying to not feel embarrassed.
Yes. And there were two major learnings from this experience. Number one was obviously the purpose of the exercise from our professor. He said, if you are asking your clients to go through that, you need to know how that feels. Mm-hmm. That was number one. And I'm forever grateful for that. And the other one was to experience that even if that happens, and it happened, right? I embarrassed myself. Nothing happened. Mm-hmm, nothing
mm-hmm. happened. Even if it happened, nothing happened. That's a great line.
And that was really important to experience that even if that happens, I'm still okay. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm still okay. And you will still be okay. Right? And, you know, my colleague, my fellow student, like, he had it even worse, I would say.
I was going to ask you, what did everybody else had to do? Was it all about embarrassment, that kind of stuff? What did they have to do?
We had to, you know, to pick and choose from mm-hmm. a majority of different tasks. And my mm-hmm. colleague, I mean, that was really another crazy thing, too. He had to go to a boat and find a rich person, somebody who looks like they have money. Mm-hmm. You know, we were discussing about that he has some beliefs that money is kind of bad, you know, rich people, blah, blah, blah. So he had to go up to that person, find somebody, and ask them how they got to so much money. And then tell them, I don't think you're a good person because I think rich people, they don't have a good soul. Something along those lines.
Oh my God, it's so uncomfortable. Conversation.
And we were watching him do that. I was absolutely amazing to see. Like, his knees were shaking, but he did it. In the end, of course, he told the person, look, I had to do this. And he was really understanding and nice. But anyway, as funny as it is, bottom line is, it was hard to do, but nothing happened. Mm-hmm, nothing mm-hmm. happened. It's just the feeling of, I'm afraid to feel this. This is why I don't want to do this.
And know this is normal human condition. It's a feeling that we all, every country on this world, we all kind of agree that we all don't like this one. And mm-hmm. it's okay that we don't like it. We all have the capacity to experience it. Our problem in the dare world is that this guy thinks it's danger. Mm-hmm. Embarrassment equals danger. And we're not here to make sure we're not embarrassed. We're here to unlatch fear that's been fused to embarrassment, to take fear out of embarrassment so we can go back to just being embarrassed, not embarrassment is a threat.
Yes. All right. Thank you for your sympathy, guys. Means a lot.
All right. Next question. I often wake up with nightmares and then I think I'm having a heart attack, which leads to a panic attack. Any help would be appreciated.
Mm-hmm. Great question. Mm-hmm. Who else wakes up in the middle of the night with a panic attack or with a zap and that morphs into a panic attack? Yes. Mm-hmm. When we dream, usually what triggers this, or very often what triggers this, is dreams. So, and mm-hmm. as you remember, for our brain, it really doesn't make a difference if you're dreaming or if that's happening in real life. This is why our brain puts an anesthetic onto our limbs so we don't live out our dreams. So super smart, never ceases to amaze me. But it, you know, the cortisol and adrenaline surge during your dream, it sensitizes your body. And your heart will race if you have a nightmare. So when you wake up that moment and your rational brain is still asleep. And the first thing you notice is a racing heart. Oh, racing heart. Oh, that's an association with a panic attack. Oh, no, I have a panic attack. And it's really hard. Those moments are tough to navigate because your rational brain is still asleep. I would advise you to practice going before bed and saying, tonight, most probably, I will wake up. And when I will wake up, the first thing I will remember is, oh, this is a panic attack. Okay, let it wash over me. It's going to take a few moments until my rational brain wakes up too. And I'm going to know where I am. Orientation is back. Everything will be fine. It's just those 10 to 15 seconds, 10 to 15 seconds
where you feel terror.
Of sheer terror and disorientation. We're like, oh no, what is going on? It's pure emotionality.
But you hear Aida's words? Wake, go to sleep. Now, she did not say this version, which is most people, this is our go-to. Okay, you'll be okay tonight. Just sleep well. You had a glass of wine, so you could probably sleep a little bit better. You're not going to have a heart attack because the cardiologist already cleared you. You're going to be fine. Just sleep. Everything's okay. Visualize positive things from your life. She didn't say any of that. She said, go to bed expecting to probably wake up in the middle of the night. Already you're going with the intention of maybe. You're going expecting to possibly wake up. Just the facts of this sentence, I'm looking down just because my papers are here. This describes what a normal body does. There's no disorder. There's no problem in this question. I had a nightmare, but when I woke up, I misinterpreted my fear response to my nightmare. I misinterpreted my racing heart as heart attack. So this guy got the message, oh shit, heart attack. Here's fear for the heart attack. If this person actually woke up with a heart attack, they would not be submitting a question about panic attack. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They would be just as heightened and scared, but it would be, let's fuse the fear to danger. We defuse fear from discomfort. So of course, if I thought I was having a heart attack and it turns out I was not, I probably would also have a panic attack. That's not a disorder. The disorder is, oh my God, no, now I'm having a panic attack. Now what do I do about the panic attack? How to make sure it doesn't happen again? How to calm down from a panic attack? Oh yeah, that's me. I'm just having a panic attack right now because there was a misinterpretation of my body's response to, like, the DARE message here is, well, yeah, of course I'm having a panic attack right now. Panic attack is not a panic disorder. Panic attack is like a burp. It's like a jolt. Like if Aida came up behind me and said, boo, and I jumped, I don't have a startle response disorder. I was startled. Period.
Yes. And this person might be experiencing this because either a lot of stress, because of high sensitization, or something going on in their life that leads to the body not being in a restful state at night. It could be numerous things that would go beyond the scope of this webinar here. But as Michelle said, the problem is not the waking up. So I assume the person who submitted this question hoped that we could address it in a way and say how the person could avoid that in the future. And that's not possible. This is what we're saying. Don't even try to. Because the moment you start to try to, this is when you get into a loop. And then it for sure will happen. Because the thing that is triggering it now is your fear of. And so your body stays in a heightened state. Mm-hmm. And now deep sleep will become even more challenging, if that makes sense. Right. Sleep and digestion and appetite and focus, mental clarity, the first things that get impacted by sensitization. Have you noticed that, guys? And we said that so many times in webinars. You know, it also comes down to expectation management. Mm-hmm. What do you expect from your body when you're highly sensitized? it will be off. Things will feel off. You won't be able to focus and concentrate. You won't probably do your best work. You won't be the kindest and most compassionate parent. You won't be have your records in the gym. It's just, you won't sleep the best, and your digestion will be off, and your sex drive will be off. So why not just treat ourselves with kindness and say, you know what, sensitized, I'm gonna slow my demands down. Okay. All my demands, everything that I expect from myself, usually 100%. How about going with, let's say, 60% for a few weeks?
You know, you said a good word too, because it's that, but also the, it just fell out of my head. When you wake up and it's confusing because disorientation. When you go from a state of deep sleep and to being jolted awake, probably jolted from a nightmare and fear, and now you're trying to interpret what's happening, sometimes there's a misinterpretation. Like the other day, my oldest daughter with curly, curly hair was straightening her hair with a hair dryer, okay, during the daytime. And all the smoke alarms start going off in our house, okay? We're all awake. It's daytime. And so we're all in the house, but I hear the smoke alarm, but I'm awake. I'm alert. Yes, it was startling because it was the noise, but I wasn't startled out of from one restful state to a heightened state. It was an awake state to heightened. But if you're being like startled from deep sleep to heighten, that's more of a jump. So that's more disorienting. So I was awake and I immediately I'm like, who's doing what? Because I know like who, what's happening. And I hear Emily upstairs. Sorry, it's me. Now, if this was the middle of the night, if this was 2 o'clock in the morning and the same alarms go off and that jolts, same sound, the same noise, but I'm in now from a deep sleep to wide awake, I'm going to be more confused. Probably my body will send me more scared because we more don't know what's happening. So I might have more scared because I need to more do. When I was already awake, I was down here in this office and I heard the noise going on. And so I was already alert and standing and in motion. So if you're like, you might get more fear because your body just thinks you need a little bit more, not just to wake up and be sensitized and go figure it out. So that's why we try and normalize all of this. This is what a normal body would do if your house was on fire. So it's a danger. Your body woke up to a bad dream, and that's how your body wakes up to identify danger.
And as you were saying this, I was just thinking about, you know, my son has type 1 diabetes, so I go to bed and I fully expect to wake up during the night. The first year, it felt like what Michelle described, jolting out of sleep with every alarm. Oh my God, I'm in danger. And now it's like when it happens, thankfully it doesn't happen every night, but when it happens, I'm like, oh, that's the alarm. Okay, let's go and check. And if I wouldn't expect that on some level, or at least part of me truly expect that and accept that this is just what it is, I would have a much, much harder time. So bottom line, when you're sensitized, drop your expectations off yourself a little bit. It's okay. Your body will feel off balance. Everything will feel off balance. And the more you can accept that and expect less of yourself, the easier this will be.
Right. Just like when our kids were babies, you don't expect or hope and pray I can sleep all night long. That serves no purpose. It doesn't stop you from doesn't stop the baby from waking up, doesn't stop the Dexcom alarm from going off. But when you have this expectation of trying to control something that you don't get to control, like your whole experience of waking up then will be one of frustration, will be one of failure, will be one of what's wrong with me? Why can't I sleep through the night? It's because you're trying to. But when you have babies, you're like, oh, I'll probably be up in a couple hours. Or if you pee all the time in the middle of the night, if you're going to bed trying to not wake up to pee, you're going to wake up more than everybody else, as opposed to like, and I'm a pee at nighter, right? But I know if I'm going to bed trying to not wake up or getting annoyed that I do, as opposed to like All right. Well, like, oh, I'll probably get up at 2 o'clock anyway to pee. So whatever. And you go with that idea of course I'm going to get up, like maintaining solid 8 hours of sleep. You don't get to pre-decide that anyway, you know? And again, an alarm to alert you, a Dexcom alarm and a smoke alarm and your car alarm and the alarm that went off on my phone yesterday for a tornado alert for the wind, the rain. Is supposed to jolt your body into action. I wish I recorded it. It didn't sound like this. Dun, 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 dun. It went bam, bam, and it jolted me. That Dexcom alert jolts you. The smoke alarm jolts you because its job just means, hey, pay attention. Hey, look. It doesn't even mean, hey, danger. It means, hey, look. And then we look and see if there's danger to attend to. Good thing I'm jolted up, ready for the danger. And if there's not, if it was it was just the hair dryer. Oh, it was just a misfire. Oh, it was whatever. We get scared of our jolt. We're scared of our own jolt in our body, but this is not only is it safe, your body creates jolt. So you can use it to stay safe and all of this. And then I had a panic attack at night. Okay, that's safe. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's safe.
More highly uncomfortable, right? Safe. Than those during the day, because again, this disorientation. And I had my fair share of that when I had really intense DP, I woke up many, many times during the night, and not only did I have a panic attack, but I had severe depersonalization with it. Mm-hmm. I didn't know where I was in my room. It was like those first 30 seconds until you're like, oh, okay, all right, I'm like, everything's okay. It's horrible, but it's, again, it's just discomfort. And really grounding yourself before you go to bed and say, oh, this will happen tonight again, most probably. 30 seconds are going to be hell, but during those 30 seconds where I feel like, I don't know where I am, I don't know who I am, what the fuck is going on, I'm going to remember this one thought, all is well.
Right. Because scared always feels scary. Just like sad always feels sad. We're not going to make scared feel not scared. We've just treated scared as dangerous. Scared. It's safe to be scared. So if you're up scared in the middle of the night, you're in no more or less danger than if you woke up horny in the middle of the night, than if you woke up crying from a sad dream in the middle of the night. You're just experiencing what your body's experiencing right now. We have just gotten scared of our own scared state.
And you can, if you practice, you can treat those nocturnal panic attacks the same way as you would treat them with arousal or appraisal throughout during the day. So the moment you catch one rational thought, oh, I'm having a panic attack, that's enough to elicit this response. Okay, bring it on. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to lie here and let this panic attack wash over me. It's okay. Do your thing. I'm not going to resist. It takes courage because during the night, everything is calm. There are no noises. It feels a little bit more scary. But as Michelle said, it's really the same thing. And what you can practice during the day, you can practice during the night. And if those are your focus, if that's your main issue, panic attacks at night, it's really worth investing the time and effort there. All right, guys.
All right, everybody. Thank you for joining in. We will see you on the next webinar. I'll send you a message. We have some people maybe we can start bringing in as professional guests, as some client guests that might be interested. So I know it's been the two of us for a while. So maybe in the future we might have some more people coming in for everybody to hear from, because maybe you're tired of us.
Yeah, we're glad you're around with us. That's awesome. We appreciate you a lot. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, everybody, for adding to the chat. Without the chat, it would just be us talking. Yeah. And it's so much. It's great. I know, like, we can't see you or anything, but having you guys be part of the conversation is always so helpful.
So much. Thank you, everybody. Take good care.
Bye, everyone. See you on the next call.
thank you for listening to the DARE podcast. The DARE app has over 1 million downloads and is helping people all around the world to overcome anxiety and panic attacks. You can download the app for free at DARE-response.com.